You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We got a lot to talk about today. Arkansas basketball begins last night with a win over Lipscomb. The John Calipari era begins with a 16-point victory. We'll have plenty of discussion about that. But first, we're joined by Chris Doering from SEC Network. Chris, a former Florida great receiver, going to talk to us some about the SEC, some about Razorback football. Chris, how are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, man. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Through nine games, what's your evaluation of Arkansas football?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixed bag, right? I mean, it's been such a roller coaster ride. And really, the storyline is very similar to a lot of other storylines in the SEC that fan bases are asking themselves. And that's like, what could have been? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, that Oklahoma State first half was one of the best halves we've seen them play all year long. And then to let that one get away, it was disappointing. You see the massive upset over Tennessee a couple weeks back in Fayetteville, only to come back and play very poorly last week against Ole Miss. So it certainly has been an up and down season for the fans to have to deal with. But I do think I've seen a lot that I feel good about. You know, I've felt like the plan offensively has been much improved, and going out and making the moves that they did to get Coach Petrino and Taylen Green. I feel like there is a good finger on the pulse of the direction of what was needed to get this team to where they needed to get. And a lot to say about Travis Williams as well, first-time defensive coordinator. That game, albeit not great last week against Ole Miss, but I do think there's a lot of things that show me signs of improvement that also show me signs of a head coach being in touch with what his program needs.
I enjoy it on Saturday nights, winding down and watching what you and Dari Noka and Ben Watson do on SEC Network. And
you had
kind of a humorous anecdote, I guess, earlier this year. You compared Taylen Green to a roller coaster at the county fair. You said he's up and down. You never really know what you're going to get. Has he done anything to change that evaluation of him?
I think I've seen him be a little bit more judicious with the football. You know, I think that that game two games ago against Mississippi State, where you see him account for six touchdowns on only one interception, and really that interception was more off of a tip ball than it was a poor throw that he made. So I do feel like he's getting better at minimizing the negative plays and playing to the strengths. I also think that he needs to have a compliment, and Quentin Jackson's injury was disappointing to not see him there as kind of that lightning or the thunder to the lightning that the Taylen Green has. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Taylen has improved and understands that some of the things you probably could get away with at Boise are not things that you can get away with at Arkansas and the SEC.
What do you think has happened to Arkansas defensively? I mean, this was a team, it felt like through six games, they were hanging their hat on their defense. And then the last three games, it's the production's really fallen off a cliff.
I wish I could give you that answer. I'm sure that Travis Williams wish he could give you that answer as well. And I thought early in the season, the secondary was doing a great job of defending balls in the air, the pass breakups were really standing out to me. And then to see last week, to see Watkins running as wide open as he was over and over again, despite, you know, having already seen him catch a couple touchdowns early in that game and knowing that Trey Harris wasn't there, it just didn't make sense to me. So I think it's a combination of maybe some decline up front on the defensive line and the secondary not being quite as stingy in their pass coverage as they were early in the season.
Arkansas's off this week. Texas comes in here next weekend in Fayetteville. Texas plays the Gators this week. I want to ask you about the Longhorns. You know, Steve Sarkisian and Lane Kiffin, I think they get kind of lumped together sometimes because they're from the same tree. They've coached together on multiple occasions at USC and Alabama. I wonder, as you watch their offenses, what's alike and what's different?
I tell you what, I love Sark's offense, you know, going back to when he was the coordinator at Alabama, you know, I thought he did some of the best jobs of creating mismatches for receivers, the way that he utilized Devontae Smith in that offense, moving him around. I love what they do in some of their switch releases out of stacks and two-man route combinations. I think that, I think Lane Kiffin's offense is more predicated, ironically, on being able to run the football first and foremost, which they have not been able to do this year, especially in SEC play. But I think, to me, Sark's offense is maybe a little bit more of a pass first offense and one that they'll run the ball, but after having success throwing the football first.
Arkansas, you know, the last couple of games here in Fayetteville, the losses, they've faced two really good quarterbacks, Garrett Nussmeier from LSU. Obviously, we saw what Jackson Dart did the other day. He got National Player of the Week because of his performance here. Yet Quinn Ewers coming in here next. Carson Beck, obviously, has got a lot of accolades. Like, what's the hierarchy right now in quarterback play in the SEC?
Changes every week, doesn't it? I mean, it just like the team that you feel most confident in the previous week is the one that comes and lets you down the next week, as we saw with Texas A&M last 2 weeks ago, having that big win at home over LSU, only to come back and get shut out in the second half in a crazy environment. Williams-Brice this past weekend. Now, I think, honestly, we have to look at it differently. We're not looking at it as like, who's the best quarterback at the next level. Mm-hmm. Who's doing the job that they're asked to do in the system that they're in? And I think the overwhelming answer there is Diego Pavia. Diego mm-hmm. Pavia has been the most consistent quarterback in this conference. He's not necessarily putting up the numbers that you'll see some of the other guys put up, but I think he's the most consistent and understands how to operate his offense the best. I had Garrett Nussmeier up there right with Pavia prior to the Texas A&M game, but for mm-hmm. him to throw that interception midway through the third quarter, that basically changed the football game, leads me to believe that he's more careless with the ball than I thought. I think if you go back to that South Carolina game, you know, if that pick six doesn't get overturned with the crazy call that they made on the return, we probably look at Nuss very differently. But mm-hmm. I'm really concerned about Carson Beck and his turnovers, the propensity to do that. You know, if you're going to use Jalen Milroe the right way, I think Jalen Milroe's up there, but the right way is not asking him to drop back and throw the ball 50 times like they did against Tennessee. I think he's mm-hmm. the most dangerous player with the ball in his hands in the SEC. So use him more in the run game and let him take some shots down the field and minimize his throws to 20 to 25 a game.
Chris Doering of SEC Network, co-host of SEC This Morning on Sirius XM. I think Ole Miss is the most talented team in the SEC, and I think it showed the other day in Fayetteville. They've still got a chance at the playoff. They got to be perfect to get there. I wonder, though, and we even heard Kirby Smart say this yesterday. He said he thought offensively and defensively, you know, from just an overall, you know, production standpoint and efficiency standpoint, he thinks Ole Miss is the best team. What's the disconnect then between them being the, you know, like having all this talent and being there with two losses, notably that loss to Kentucky and really kind of fighting for their playoff life right now?
I cannot. I don't know if you saw this, but the odds, if they win this week against Georgia, their odds of making the college football playoff is like 40%. If they lose, it goes down to like 0.8%. Mm-hmm. And the reason there's such a big margin is because of that loss to Kentucky that you talked about. Like that is the most inexplicable loss of the entire season, particularly watching what Kentucky has done since that game. To see mm-hmm. them lose, what, seven straight home games against SEC opponents or whatever it is now, and yet they go on the road and knock off Kentucky, it's just hard to understand. So I think one of the biggest issues that we've seen from Ole Miss is their inability to run the football. I think their offensive line has been a little bit of a letdown. But I think if you look at the offensive line since they got into SEC play, you hadn't had Jaden Williams. And that's a huge part of the success of this group. They should have him back this week against Georgia, mm-hmm. But they've got to find a way to run the football. And Henry Parrish's injury, him being out, is certainly going to make that even more difficult. But I do think you'll see this Ole Miss offense as at full strength as you'll see them the entire season since they've gotten into SEC play with getting Williams and presumably Trey Harris back.
Any surprises in the college football playoff rankings the other night?
disrespect for Vanderbilt. I think Vandy should have been a team that was ranked in the top 25. I also think that, that Georgia should have been ahead of Ohio State, but that'll play itself out. But not having South Carolina or Vanderbilt in the top 25 was probably the most surprising to me.
Take us inside the two big games this week, Chris. I mean, you got Georgia at Ole Miss that you talked about. You've got Alabama at LSU. You know, both of these, or all four of these teams, still have a shot at the playoff. But like, what are your evaluations of these games?
I think the Georgia Ole Miss game. I wish the weather projection was going to be better. We're talking about an 80% chance of rain, I think, there in Oxford. Mm-hmm. So that is obviously going to hurt a team that's very one dimensional. But the matchup I'm looking at is that offensive line for Georgia that has not been a typical Georgia Bulldog offensive line, going up against a defensive line, the best defensive line that they'll play all season long. Carson Beck under pressure last week from Florida on 7 dropbacks. He completed one of those passes to guys in red jerseys and 3 to guys in white jerseys. So I think if Ole Miss can create some pressure on Carson Beck, we know he has a propensity to turn the football over.
A&M announced this week Le'Veon Moss out for the rest of the season with an injury. You know, they're still in the thick of things from a conference standpoint, trying to get to Atlanta. How does this affect them moving forward?
I mean, the Le'Veon Moss injury is massive. Obviously, you've got some other running backs there, but none of them have the same sort of physicality that Le'Veon Moss does. And so I think it's a huge injury. It's disappointing for Texas A&M. But, I mean, there's a lot of other guys in the league that you've had to look at. Look at my alma mater, next man up from Graham Mertz to DJ Lagway. Now you're down to your third quarterback. It's mm-hmm. the reality of playing football in the SEC.
We'll get you out of here on this, Chris. Feels like every week in the SEC, there is a result that we didn't see coming, whether it be Kentucky over Ole Miss or Arkansas over Tennessee, Vanderbilt over Alabama. I'd even say South Carolina winning wasn't a surprise, but winning by 24 over A&M was quite surprising. Florida being in the game with Georgia so late, I thought was surprising the other day. What do you think is behind all of this competition that we're seeing in the conference this year? Because it feels a lot different to me than it, you know, the last few years have.
It definitely does. Obviously, you know, adding Oklahoma and Texas, we knew the league was going to get more competitive. But I think the biggest thing is what everybody complained about in the offseason, and that's the transfer portal and NIL opportunities. You're dispersing talent to more places now. The Alabamas and Georgias don't have the depth of talent that they used to because guys are going to look for more opportunities. And you're seeing rosters that are flawed. You're seeing that some of the other teams that may not have been competitive in the past have chances to win. And from week to week, we're seeing inconsistent play. And it goes back to the quarterback position. We talked about that discussion earlier. The quarterback is the most important player in sports. And when you have inconsistencies from week to week at the most important position, you're going to have weeks where you have crazy upsets like we've seen.
Hey, Chris, we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, man. Good to be on with you.
All right, thank you. Chris Doering of SEC Network. When we come back, we'll talk about Arkansas basketball, the start to the John Calipari era last night. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. The John Calipari era is officially underway in Fayetteville. The Razorbacks beat Lipscomb 76-60 last night over at Bud Walton Arena. This is what Calipari had to say after the game.
That is a very, very hard game to play out of the gate because you got to be disciplined and you better be in shape because they're going to run you for 25 seconds. And then we play fast and pressure. So we had guys exhausted with 3 minutes into the game. I come back to defensively, we did some good things, but we had to create a gap by creating turnovers. Well, against good teams, you're not going to just go create a turnover. You can't. How about this thought? Make a three. How about that thought? You make seven or eight today. You get three or four more today. I want you to think of the score. And we had 19 threes. I'm glad we didn't shoot more because we'd have missed more. But we are – the good news is we threw the ball inside today and we did some good stuff. So we know we can do it.
Season opener for Arkansas, John Calipari already in mid-season form. Anthony, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, so, that's a good Lipscomb team they beat. Lipscomb team that had already played a game, a real game, and beat a good Duquesne team on the road. They had already gotten their legs under them a little bit, and I thought Arkansas had some good moments, some bad moments. I thought they started the game pretty flat. Definitely didn't really crash the offensive boards maybe as much as you would like just overall. But obviously you had mentioned the three-point shooting on their end. I believe they finished 4 of 19 or something like that. So not great. I don't think you can really complain all that much about that performance against a Lipscomb team that should win the A-Sun and a team that has already played a game. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a good performance.
Some stats to know from last night: Boogie Flan led the Razorbacks with 17 points. Nelly Davis with 15. Zvonimir Visic with 12. He struggled with fouls early in the second half, or early in the first half, I should say, and didn't get a whole lot of run until the second half. He was big down the stretch, though. Hit a three, had a 3-point play, big plays in the game. Turnovers, I thought, were really the story of the game. Arkansas forced 19 from Lipscomb, turned those into 25 points. Arkansas committed 12, Anthony, but they had 6 by the second media timeout in the first half, and then they went 19 minutes and 19 seconds before they committed their 7th, holding on to the basketball, valuing the basketball. That's what allowed the game to turn in their favor.
Yeah, and you mentioned forcing the turnovers, and Calipari had obviously mentioned forcing the turnovers. Against a team probably like Baylor, you're probably not going to force, 19 turnovers. Mm-hmm. But it's good to get that, experience in right away, especially against it. Lipscomb moves the ball around really well. That's a team that, a lot of those guys were on the team last season that finished 2nd in the A-Sun and made the conference tournament semifinal. There's a lot of continuity there. So if you're forcing a lot of turnovers against a team that knows how to play with each other, that's a good sign. And then cutting off the turnovers. Lipscomb, I believe early in the game, Lipscomb led by as many as 5, if I'm not mistaken. And a lot of that came on, missed opportunities for Arkansas, be that, kind of chucking up a three when, really probably shouldn't. Or those turnovers you had mentioned. So cleaning that up was obviously a big part of the game. You mentioned Boogie Fland. I don't remember how many turnovers he had, but he was big down the stretch.
He had one in 36 minutes.
Yeah, very good down the stretch. John L. Davis, I thought, was really good, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Carter Knox had a couple really nice moments. Billy Richmond, probably not the guy that you're really going to think about when you look back at that game, but I thought he had a really impactful minutes as well. So, and Calipari during his press conference had talked a little bit about maybe even utilizing Billy Richmond as a point guard if they needed to, which I thought was kind of interesting. You get Jonas Adu back, even though he didn't really play all that much. It's just good for him to get his feet under him, mm-hmm. And just kind of get used to playing in the system and everything like that. So, yeah, there's a lot to like, especially like you mentioned, cutting down on those turnovers from the early part of the game.
Have we decided, are we calling him Nelly Davis or John L. Davis?
As a professional, I always like to
Can
use
Can we make an executive decision here?
I always like to use the given name, so I always will say John L. Davis or Zvonimir Ivicic.
But on social media, he's got Nelly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like
we need to ask.
Like
I think that's what this boils down to. We've got to ask him. What do you want to go by?
I always, unless I'm told specifically to call somebody by
like Boogie
something. Yes.
Because his real name is John Well.
Yeah. So unless like specifically said like, okay, this is going to be Boogie Fland, I'm going to call him John L. Davis until somebody says like, hey, call him Nelly.
I'm going to go with Nelly.
Okay, I can go with it.
We'll just go back.
Yeah, that works. Like, I don't really say Big Z all that much whenever referring to Zvonimir Ivicic, just because
you can say it.
I can't say it. Yeah, years of watching European soccer will do that for you. But like, I don't know. I'm a professional. Like, I'm not hanging out with these guys, so I don't know. Do I get to use their nicknames?
We're going to find out. We're gonna get to the bottom of this. Does he want to go by Nelly, or does he want to go by John L? A few other stats to know, and the turnovers, I think, affected this quite a bit. Arkansas outscored Lipscomb 23-5 in transition points, 54-22 in the paint. Arkansas, you know, you talked about the first 8 minutes of the game, or I think you kind of alluded to this, or I think the first 8 to 10 minutes of the game, it was just too much standing around the three-point line, shooting perimeter shots. Obviously, the turnovers affected the lack of offensive flow, you know, during that stretch. It's when they started putting the ball on the floor and getting to the rim. Davis had there were three straight possessions where Davis went to the rim, cuts it to a three-point game. Then DJ Wagner goes to the rim, an and one, ties it with the free throw. And then Davis goes to the rim and puts Arkansas up for good. Lipscomb takes a timeout. Arkansas comes out with a full court press, forces a couple of turnovers, gets a couple of more easy shots at the basket. It was getting to the basket. That was the key for Arkansas. In the first half, it turned the game. The second half, they come out, they build a 15-point lead, and then all of a sudden what happens? They start shooting threes all over the place again, and they quit going to the basket. Game gets close. Ivicic hits a three, and then the rest of the game going to the basket, and that's how they put the game away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just kind of mentioning that, you know, I think some of that, especially early on, and then maybe when Lipscomb kind of got back into it in the second half, some of that I think kind of comes down to the Lipscomb scheme, kind of inviting them to shoot those threes because they did not shoot well from three.
Their coach said afterward, it said, you have to kind of pick your poison. You have to decide what you're going to live and die by. Mm-hmm. And they wanted Arkansas shooting those threes.
Yeah, because, I mean, Arkansas had shot under 30% from three against Kansas and against TCU, and then obviously again against Lipscomb. So I felt like that was, you know, part of the game plan. They wanted them to take those shots, and if you make a three here and there, you're going to live with that because, Arkansas defended the three-point line well. I think Lipscomb shot 33% from three, so it wasn't like a vintage Lipscomb three-point shooting game that you've kind of, or I say this like everybody watches Lipscomb basketball like I do, but you know, typically you're going to see Lipscomb shoot better from three than that. So that, you know, comes down to credit for Arkansas to, you know, defend the three-point line. But I did feel like that was an emphasis for Lipscomb.
Arkansas missed its first 9 three-pointers, finished 4 of 19. Like Anthony said, Lipscomb was 9 of 27 from beyond the arc. This is what John Calipari had to say about the three-point shooting.
We did good stuff. It was a good first win against a team that's going to win a lot of games. And held them to 30-whatever percent, 33 from the three, except we shot 15%. And we're supposed to be a good three-point shooting team. So you have no questions? Now that I...
Just waiting for you to stop talking.
I don't ever stop. I just keep going.
Yeah, we left that part in for good measure. I think we're going to have fun listening to his press conferences.
Absolutely. And Bob was...
He's a showman.
Yeah, he very much is. He likes being the center of attention, yeah. I think. He enjoyed it. He was talking about the three that Boogie Fland made that kind of bounced around the rim, and the exact quote is,
one of the stats, I think, and you kind of touched on rebounds, that I think Arkansas is going to look at this game and say, hey, this has got to get cleaned up. Lipscomb had 18 second-chance points despite being out-rebounded by 6. Arkansas even had more offensive rebounds than Lipscomb did. 5 offensive rebounds leading to 18 second-chance points. I think the 4-point play might have been part of that helps. But it's like when they got the offensive rebound, they really made the most out of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned that 4-point play. I believe they got a 3 after that, too, that was off an offensive rebound. If I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong. But No, you did mention it. The offensive rebounding, maybe a little bit of a concern, and maybe that is alleviated a little bit as Jonas Adu, you know, gets more used to the system and is able to play more minutes. But you want to see your guys like Trevin Brazil, Zvonimir Ivicic, and you know, Adu Thiro really kind of you know, take that on. And like I mentioned earlier, I didn't think Arkansas, especially early on, was really crashing the offensive boards all that much, which, you know, maybe you want to see more of. But overall, you know, and also that's a Lipscomb team that, you know, size wise didn't really have it with Arkansas. You're making a face.
Well, I mean, my brain's working over here. I just don't understand. I think these stats have got to be wrong. How can you have 18 second chance points off of 5 offensive rebounds? Make those numbers work.
Let's see. I'm not a math guy, so bear with me. 18 points off 5 offensive rebounds. So you got the 4.
Yeah.
3.
Well, let's not do math on air.
7.
I don't think it works. You'd have to have a bunch of 4-point plays, and they didn't. Blake, have you got the equation for us?
I don't. I was just going to point out something that stuck out to me last night about Trevin Brazil, who's a guy that we haven't talked about yet. You know, last year we talked a lot about how he would hurt the team when he would try to make like a highlight dunk. Instead of just making an easy dunk or a layup, he would try to have some big tomahawk dunk, and he was missing them. He was missing all these dunks early in the season. Last night I noticed multiple times where he could have had some huge dunk, but he just kind of did a casual one and just got the ball in the basket. And at one point he even just kind of, he got above the rim and he just kind of dropped the ball through the hoop and didn't try to like slam it home. And so I think that's a good sign for his, you know, maturity and his development in this system so far.
And I think Davis or Brazil, I think he kind of understands what his role is on the team. It's totally different than last year. They were expecting him to be a centerpiece of the team last year, and that's not the case. I will say this about him and about Nelly Davis, that I thought both of them had a bunch of hustle plays early that really stood out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like Blake mentioned, you know, Trevin, you know, he's a guy I've covered for a long time, which is kind of funny to say because I haven't even lived in Arkansas for a year just because I covered him in his freshman season at Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've kind of seen him kind of grow and develop. You know, his freshman year, he was a guy who really liked to hang out on the perimeter and still likes to do that to a certain degree. But he's really advanced in his inside game. And I think, like you mentioned, has embraced his role on this team and kind of filling in where he's needed. You know, how much that's going to boost the NBA stock that we all kind of know he wants to improve, we'll see. We haven't really seen him, I think, really take off in the system just yet, though I do think he can, and I think John Calipari thinks he can too, just because of how he's talked about him when he's been, you know, asked about him.
I think the limited number of people who saw the TCU exhibition last Friday, they were maybe kind of having flashbacks last night when Arkansas, you know, at TCU, Arkansas was up 13, blew a 13-point lead, didn't score for the last 3.5 minutes of that game. Last night, they went on a long drought, 15-point game, became a 4-point game late. And this is what John Calipari had to say about learning from the TCU game.
He held them to a percentage. If we knew how to finish, you saw I finished the game a little different today, because we'd work on it. Thank God we played TCU. Because if I let them try to finish the game, you know what? We'd have shot balls and shot threes, and all of a sudden they came down. You lose this game. So we kind of grounded out. Let's finish the game off. And I thought the guys did a good job.
He said on his coach's show Monday night, he said that, okay, you guys, and talking about his players, he said, you guys have shown me that I'm going to have to finish the game for you. Basically meaning that I'm going to have to coach you through this. It's not going to be something that you're going to be able to work through, you know, on your own on the floor, which really stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that TCU game was kind of the evidence to that. I think I wrote a little bit about how they obviously were up for the 13, 15, whatever it was, and TCU ends the third quarter on an 8-0 run because they played in quarters, not halves. And that really kind of shifted everything towards TCU. And maybe you could see it a little bit against Lipscomb last night, and that experience obviously benefited them. But I never really felt like Lipscomb was really fully in control, even though that might sound weird. Like, I never really felt like Lipscomb was going to take the lead, which might sound weird, just sitting from my seat in press row, and never really got the sense that Lipscomb was going to win that game, especially, you know, in the second half, even though they had cut it down to 4 points. But the experience of playing against a team like TCU that, you know, goes probably inside more than Lipscomb does, just because they've got Ernest Udeh. But that's not to say that, you know, Lipscomb can't, because Jacob Ognacevic can play anywhere. And they did try to go inside through him quite a bit, but guarding the perimeter well, especially after they had taken the timeout when Lipscomb really cut it close, I thought was, you know, an important factor that, you know, they did at points in the TCU game. They started off defending the perimeter really poorly against TCU, and then for like 75% of the rest of the game, they were really good until Brendan Wenzel hit the winning shot.
Last night is why you test yourself in the preseason. It's why you play KU. It's why you play TCU, because if Arkansas plays D2 teams in the preseason, that game last night might have gone a lot differently. There were a lot of teaching moments that they were able to glean out of those preseason games. We got a lot more to come on our podcast, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Eventful day in Fayetteville yesterday. Arkansas obviously opening the season with the win over Lipscomb. I will say this, the attendance is going to be announced at 19,200 the entire year because they've sold out the arena for the season. I was surprised that there were not more people in the stands. You know, I mean, just sitting there eyeballing it, I would say probably somewhere around 13 to 15,000 were in the seats.
Yeah, I was also a little bit surprised. I know it's a Wednesday night and against a, you know, a mid-major opponent who people who don't regularly or religiously watch mid-major basketball maybe don't know that much about.
But it's Kyle Perry's first game.
That was the biggest surprise, yeah.
I almost wonder if people considered the Kansas game the official kickoff to Calipari. Even though the game didn't count, I wonder if there were people who said, you know, hey, that's the game. That's the game that we're all going to come out and kind of celebrate him being here instead of this game against Lipscomb.
Yeah, I can see that because, I mean, they did the whole the light show thing against Kansas. This felt more like a standard, all right, we're here to play basketball kind of game as opposed to, you know, maybe having some of the festivities. I don't know.
I cannot understand. And I mean, I get it. People live a long way away who buy tickets. I just don't understand how your tickets don't get used. You know, and I know this is one game. But there's going to be a lot of games like this. If it's like this for the first game, it's probably going to be like this through December, would be my guess. That you're not
you don't
going
think
to
they're
have...
going to fill it against Maryland Eastern Shore?
I do not.
Wow.
No, I don't. They've got a Friday night game, right, against, is it, what, Little Rock? They play Little Rock on Friday night?
That sounds right. I don't know off the top of my head. Just
if it was Maryland Western Shore, maybe.
Eastern Shore? Oh, yeah, fair.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Maryland Eastern Shore didn't have a coach until July, I think. So, I mean, that's fair.
So these are their games before conference play starts, not counting the neutral site games that are going to be, you know, real big tickets, Baylor and Dallas, Illinois and Kansas City, Michigan at Madison Square Garden. At home, they've got Troy next Wednesday. It's a 7 o'clock tip-off. Probably going to be a comparable crowd, if not less, because you don't have that novelty of it being Calipari's first game. You got Pacific on a Monday night, November 18th at 7. Little Rock is at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, November 22nd. You might get a little bit of a bump there because you've got Darryl Walker as the coach at Little Rock. Also, that's the night before a home football game. And so I could see a little bit of a bump there. But, I mean, outside of that, a few days before Christmas, they play North Carolina A&T. And December 30th, they play Oakland. I'm going to be surprised if you see a full house before SEC play starts.
So you don't think that Pacific is going to bring out a full house?
No, I do not. So
again, if it was Atlantic, maybe.
Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
Florida Gulf Coast?
No. So I
maybe Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast. But
so I went to the game yesterday fresh off an MRI. You ever had an MRI?
I've not.
Boy, it was an experience. I've had, you know, I mean, obviously we've all had x-rays, I think. I've even had a couple of CT scans for bicycle accidents that I've had. Got hit by a car last summer and thrown off my bicycle.
What?
And that was it really happened.
What?
Yeah, it took a lot of people to help me get back going. No, I was trying to cross 112 out by the old drive-in theater, and a woman just came up from behind me. I was sitting in a parking lot, and a woman came up from behind me, and pow, and I go flying out in the middle of 112. Thank God there were cars with brakes, because otherwise it could have ended a lot worse. So I've had CT scans, but I'd never had an MRI. I've been having this knee injury that I've been dealing with for a couple of months. And so when you go into the MRI, they strap you down like you're Frankenstein, number one, at least, you know, where they're going to be. So, like, my left leg was in this, I don't even know what you'd call it, but, I mean, it's strapped down pretty good. And the radiation tech asked me, she goes, see, and because I'd never had an MRI, I went in there thinking, like, this is going to be over in 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. Because whenever I went in there, I said, how long is this going to take? She goes, about 40 minutes. I was like, oh, okay. So I thought back to, but before we came into the room, she goes, what kind of music do you like? I said, I'm not picky. I like a lot of different kind of music. And she looks at my boots. She goes, you look like a today's country kind of guy. And I go, I'm more of a yesterday's country kind of guy. And so I'm glad, because what happens is they put you on the bed and they put these earphones on you and they turn these things up full blast, because the MRI machine is so loud that this is, you know, meant to, I guess, kind of drown out the noise. Anyway, so thank God that I'm not stuck there for 40 minutes with today's country, because I would have, I mean, the only thing worse than being, like, you know, strapped down to this table and not being able to move for 40 minutes is that plus Kelsey Ballerini or, you know, whatever, you know, whoever the people are that sing now.
Yeah, I'm not much a country guy. So
well, I'm not today's country.
I know Luke Combs.
Yeah, this wasn't bad. I mean, we had some Oak Ridge Boys. We had some
Johnny
George
Cash?
Strait. No Johnny Cash. Ah. Had Willie Nelson. Merle played.
Some Willie.
George Jones played. Waylon Jennings played. Alan Jackson played. So, I mean, the time went by fast. And there's no clock in there. And so I'm like, she said 35 to 40 minutes. And so I'm counting songs. I'm like, let's say every song goes 3 minutes. Okay. Then you were 8 songs. Right? And sure enough, middle of the 11th song, the nightmare ends. But I come out of there, and I've had these earphones on, you know, for 45 minutes.
You had a vision of John Calipari's first game against
No, here's what happened. I mean, I sounded like an old man trying, like have a normal conversation. I'm just shouting. And it reminded me of this Joe Kines clip from the Independence Bowl. This was in 2006. Play it, Blake.
Stop that little inside trap. You know, the option didn't hurt as much. We played pretty hard. We just got to stop that inside thing. Offensively, we kind of sputtered around, got the ball in the end zone. But, you know, defensively, we got to get out off the field on that two-minute drive.
With key injuries to your offensive line, what do you do in the second half?
Oh, we're just going to play. We just got to keep playing.
Thank you, Coach.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's how I sounded ordering lunch after I walked out of the hospital yesterday.
That I had never seen that clip. That's
Joe Kines. Joe Kines, he legendary defensive coordinator. Was Arkansas's interim coach in 1992. Jack Crow loses to the Citadel. You don't remember this. You're born. Loses to the Citadel in the first game of the year, 10-3. And Joe Kines gets elevated. And He leads Arkansas through their first SEC season. So that's how I sounded yesterday. And then I go through all of that, and I'm like, okay, now I'm going to go into this other, you know, loud environment at Bud Walton Arena. And it really wasn't there. The MRI and the Oak Ridge Boys were the loudest environment that I was in yesterday.
I'm still stuck on you getting hit by a car.
It happened. There's a
police. I don't mean to be laughing no, there's at the fact that
there's
you,
a police
you were,
report. There's
you were hit by a car.
I said some things I probably shouldn't have said. Yeah, I was like, you think I meant to hit you? I don't know what you were doing. Yeah, fire trucks, ambulance, everybody. It was fun. Not really, but it's an experience.
It's unique. I think you're the only person. I don't know that we can. Yeah, I think you're the only person I know.
Hey, speaking of injuries,
like who's been hit by a car?
Yeah, I used to try to ride my bike about 20, 25 miles a day during the summertime, and that slowed it down. Let me tell you that. Go ahead, Blake.
I said, speaking of injuries, we have a Sam Pittman clip.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there we go. Blake with the great transition.
Blake's trying to get us out of here. This is what Sam Pittman had to say yesterday about JaQuinton Jackson and Taylen Green and their injuries and their potential availability for the Texas game.
I still think we're a few days away from both those guys determining what their ability to play against Texas would be. I can tell you this. I don't know if either one of them would be able to play if we were playing Saturday. So I think without avoiding the question, just giving you a true answer, I think we still have to wait until probably a Monday of next week to see exactly where we're at with those two guys. Taylor's got a sprained knee, and certainly JJ's got that ankle. So they were out in the walkthrough yesterday, but I don't know that they'll be available really for practice today.
So much of Arkansas's success this year has been due to Taylen Green and JaQuinton Jackson, and I feel like the way that they kind of play off of one another. And if neither of them are available for Texas, that looks like a really concerning game. It's already concerning after what you saw Ole Miss and its offense do against Arkansas the other day. If you don't have an offense that can potentially counter that, I think there's some concern next week.
Yeah, no, and especially, I mean, Arkansas's running game has been, you know, at least good, serviceable, if nothing else, without JaQuinton Jackson, I feel. I did not get to see the Ole Miss game. I was driving back from.
You didn't miss anything.
I was driving back from Fort Worth, so don't judge me too much. I'm going off old info. but I mean, you did mention it, the way those two guys have kind of played off each other, especially, you know, when Taylen's able to go out and running into the open field. You know, I mean, that's been a big part of, you know, Arkansas's offensive success. So if one or neither of those guys can play against Texas, it might be trouble.
No, I think that's absolutely right. Texas is a good team. I mean, you think about it, the only game they've lost is to Georgia. And so that's going to be an uphill battle, you know, to beat those guys. And again, you know, Malachi Singleton, if he gets to play, it's good experience for him. I just think that, you know, with him, he led the touchdown drive against Tennessee. A couple of big runs by Braylon Russell during that drive, and I think there's some questions about Braylon Russell's health after the other day against Ole Miss, too. Singleton, he led some scoring drives against Ole Miss the other day, but he didn't do it against the first-team Ole Miss defense. And so I really wonder, you know, like how would he stand up and perform against Texas if he was asked to do that for an entire game?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I don't know that we really know the answer. Obviously, he did have the winning drive against Tennessee, another game I was not able to watch because I was at a wedding. but you know, he had that experience against Tennessee, led the winning drive, and you know, I did go back and watch it, and I thought was very good in the situation. And the thing about, you know, Malachi Singleton is the coaches trust him, We asked about that, you know, kind of in the offseason, just like how confident are you that if something were to happen to Taylen, that Malachi could step in and, you know, lead that offense. And, you know, I didn't get like, oh, coach speaky, like, oh yeah, we're really confident vibes off it. I really do think that they believed in him as their second choice quarterback. But to do it against potentially do it against Texas. I don't want to say that he's going to be, you know, starting right now, obviously, but to potentially have to do that against Texas is probably a whole different beast.
We're in a weird time of year. It's what I call the overlap season. We're still got football season to go or to finish, and basketball season has started.
I don't think I've gotten a healthy amount of sleep in weeks.
I mentioned this yesterday. You know, when I was a kid, basketball season didn't start until like Thanksgiving, like November 25th, 26th, 28th, somewhere in there. That was always your basketball start date. And now it's before Election Day and in the years that you have elections. And so it's really changed, you know, I think how much attention gets paid to the early part of college basketball season. Because, again, you know, and here it's a weird dynamic because a lot of people, I feel like they've jumped ship from football because of what happened against Ole Miss the other day. Now you're 5-4. But, you know, you can still make a bowl, but it's not going to be that great of a bowl. Basketball, yeah, you're paying attention, but the games – now Baylor's a big game this weekend. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of a weird deal. Anyway, I was thinking about all that. I think Blake's got this pulled up. The Memphis AD, I don't know if truer words have ever been spoken by an AD. His name's Ed Scott. He's got two first names. This is what he had to say on the football coach's radio show last night in Memphis. And I don't know that there's a soundbite that better encapsulates how much college football has changed in the last 25 years than saying what you're about to hear him say right now.
Well, the first thing I think is perspective, right? I think sometimes you have to step back from the situation and understand how good we really are. Nobody's happy with 7-2. And if I said anything different, you all know I'd be lying. I expect to win every game that we lace them up. And Navy and UTSA tripped us up pretty good. But at the end of the day, we're still 7-2, right? And I think that's really important for folks to understand.
So he's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth, but the soundbite, nobody's happy with 7-2. I mean, where are we as like football when nobody is happy with 7-2? Nobody's happy with
7-2.
And this is Memphis. This isn't Georgia's AD or Ole Miss's AD talking. This is Memphis.
I mean, Memphis was one of the better Group of Five teams, kind of expected to be challenging for that Group of Five playoff spot that now kind of looks.
But they also thought they'd lose to Florida State in the preseason.
I mean, everybody kind of thought that, though. And now Florida State is.
I think if you looked at Memphis's schedule.
Bad words, but I won't.
Look, I think if you looked at Memphis's schedule before the season started, a lot of people would probably say, hey, if you know, through 9 games, 7-2 would be a good result.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
But nobody's happy with 7-2? I mean, like, what are we doing here?
I mean, expectations and stuff can shift through, you know, as the season, I guess, kind of goes. I'm sure if you were, I don't know. But I don't know what I'm trying to say. But, yeah, I can understand that viewpoint. But I guess maybe the losses to the teams they lost to maybe make the 7-2 hurt a little bit more.
I feel like when I was a kid, you know, unless it was Nebraska or Penn State, Michigan, you know, Florida, whatever the great game, the great teams were at that time, Florida State, that if you were 7-2 at this point in the season, you're ecstatic. I mean, you're fundraising like crazy. People are already, you know, excited to buy season tickets for the next year. You know, your coach might get a contract extension and a pay raise because you went 7-2. You're going to a good bowl game, probably, and now nobody's happy with 7-2. It's amazing how things have changed. And honestly, the playoff is, I think, was what's been the biggest mover in that, you know, the biggest force in that change, because now it's like if you're not part of the playoff discussion, seems like,
yeah,
you know, even
outs and everything like that.
A certain percentage of your fans don't care when you're not part of the playoff discussion.
Yeah, I mean,
they're going to still tune in. I mean, I don't mean to get
you're
but
good.
They're still going to tune in and they're going to watch the games and they're going to be excited if you win. You know, aesthetically pleasing enough, but you know, it's like if you're not in the playoff discussion, people just kind of check out.
Yeah, I mean, then you get, like, you know, players opting out for draft purposes, which you totally understand.
I mean, sometimes they just draft, they just opt out because they've had enough and they want to go play somewhere else next year.
That too, yeah. So, I mean, I guess that all kind of plays into it. And the playoff expanding maybe hopefully will alleviate some of those, I guess, concerns, or I guess, I don't know that apathy is the right word, but maybe some of that. But yeah, yeah. Shout out Memphis.
When the story of college football is told 30 years from now, you know, like whenever they do the, the 150 years of college football a few years, like when they update that documentary and say 175 years of college football, they'll describe this era as nobody's happy with 7-2. I mean, that's basically, it's amazing where we are from a football perspective. Hey, real quick before we get out of here, Arkansas soccer is in the SEC tournament semifinals, a place that they are very well accustomed to. They play Texas at 6 o'clock tonight. It'll be on SEC Network. These two teams played back in October down in Austin, and it was a certifiable shootout. Arkansas beat them 4-3 down there. This is a good Texas team. Arkansas trying to get to the championship game again. They've been there a lot of times. They've never been able to break through and win an SEC tournament. Do you think this is a year they can do it?
Can do it? Yeah, I do think that. I mean, I think this team has shown, you know, they've got, you know, all the capability in the world to, you know, win games, win tournaments and stuff like that. I mean, you look at their attack. I mean, I think they've got 19 different players who have scored at least one goal this season. And I mean, they've got goal threats all over the field. Their defense, you know, contrary to what that Texas game maybe would show on paper, just because of the three goals allowed, has been really good.
Texas is a high scoring team this year.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Two very good attacking teams. But, I mean, Keegan Smith's been really good in goal. I mean, that back line of Avery Wren and Kelsey Euler and Kylie Delaney has been really good, even going forward, coming out of the defense, too, to provide another attacking option. So it'll be a fun game to watch.
So here's a question. On the other side, you got Mississippi State and South Carolina. They're the number one. Basically, you've had chalk in the SEC tournament at least in the last round, because the four teams that are left are the top four seeds. Arkansas number 2, Texas 3, Mississippi State 1, South Carolina 4, and that's the semifinal games. Arkansas is ranked 5th nationally. Monday is the NCAA tournament selection show. The postseason begins next Friday. Does Arkansas, if they can win the SEC tournament and say they beat Mississippi State in the championship round, could they potentially get one of those number 1 seeds and get home field advantage throughout the postseason?
I mean, you would think so, right? Like, if you win your conference tournament with the resume they already have, I mean, they've only lost one game all season. They've got two draws, one on the road against a really good Michigan State team, and another that we talked a little bit at length about that maybe
controversial
should have been
been
a win. So I mean, you've got they've got the resume to do it, especially if they win this tournament to get one of those number 1 seeds. But I mean, you've got, you know, three other really good teams that are still alive in the tournament at this point, starting with Texas, and then whoever wins that game is going to get a very good team, you know, whether it's Mississippi State or South Carolina.
There's a 6 o'clock start tonight on SEC Network, Arkansas soccer against Texas soccer in the SEC tournament semifinals. Hope you come visit us at WholeHogSports.com for all of our coverage, whether it be football, basketball, soccer. We've got it all on our website at WholeHogSports.com. Be back with another podcast tomorrow. Ethan Westerman will be here with me. We'll kind of look at Razorback football. We'll look a little bit more at Arkansas-Baylor coming up this weekend, and we'll give our predictions on the big games of the weekend. Until then, hope we see you at our website. Have a great day, everyone.